is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. We are here in Dallas, here at the airport, ready to head over to the stadium in a few hours to see Seahawks take on the Dallas Cowboys. Big day of football that's going to be ahead. Of course, the first game is going to be the Indianapolis Colts, hottest team in football, taking on the Houston Texans. And really, kind of an interesting weekend in the standpoint that you've got six quarterbacks that are young. It's the youngest group of quarterbacks, I think, to be in the playoffs, all kind of the future. And they're going against the present because they're going against guys like Andrew Luck. And they're going against Russell Wilson that have been there before. So we've got lots to talk about. We're taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with some headlines. Well, the injury report, not too bad for both teams. As far as the Seahawks, the one player who's going to miss the game is Trey Madden. It'll be a game-time decision on J.R. Sweezy with his foot injury. He's thinking he's going to be able to go, but again, he could get overruled. That'll go in the pregame warm-up. Two players that are questionable right now. For one player that's going to be out, David Irvin, a defensive lineman with an ankle injury. Starting guard Xavier Suafila has an ankle injury, so he's going to be out. Two questionables, Tavon Austin and Darian Thompson. Expect those guys to play. For Indianapolis, they're going to be down with Ryan Grant, the wide receiver, Tyquan Lewis, a defensive end, and a safety in linebacker and safety in J.J. Wilcox. As far as Houston, Kiki Coté is supposed to play despite that hamstring injury. Of course, another injury news, Jatavius Brown out for the Chargers. He's not going to be able to play. Austin Eckler, running back, is questionable with a groin. Lots of injuries for Philadelphia. Sidney Jones is going to miss the game. He has a hamstring injury. As you know, Carson Wentz is still out. DJ Alexander, the former Seahawk special teamer, he's going to be out with a hamstring injury. Chicago's two injuries. Aaron Lynch, linebacker, he has an elbow. Eddie Jackson, he has an ankle. He's a safety, Pro Bowl safety, and is going to be out. Bobby Wagner was named first team All-Pro yesterday by the Associated Press. 50 people voting in that one. Then you also have Dwayne Brown on the second team. Michael Dixon made the first team at punter. Lots of news in that front as far as the selections for the AP team. And, of course, Washington State now takes on Washington tonight at 7:30 over at UW with a chance for the Pac-12 schedule to really start getting going and seeing where it goes. It's a pretty wide-open race, I think everybody's anticipating. And, of course, coaching moves are going on as we speak. Lots of interviews. Brian Flores is getting a bunch of interviews this weekend. I know that Mike McCarthy is in New York today talking to the New York Jets. The Miami Dolphins flew over to New Orleans and they're talking to a couple coaches, Dan Campbell, under the offensive line. Oh, tight end coach, they're talking to him. Also talking to Dennis Allen. So stay tuned. Eight job openings right now in the National Football League. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, wild card weekend, Mr. Cleveland. How you doing on this fine Saturday morning, my friend?
Doing good. Wild card weekend, no doubt.
Definitely, you were talking about the Colts and Houston. Now, you know, we've been talking all week about all football season about Deshaun Watson, and which he's a great player. But boy, that offensive line in front of him, Mr. Clayton, is not good.
No, it's awful.
Didn't he have like what 62 to 65 sacks this year?
Mm-hmm. He was the most hit quarterback in the National Football League. And it got to the point when they got past the Indianapolis game in early October. Bill O'Brien made the bold and wise decision to say, I cannot have him play and throw more than 25 passes in a game. If he does, then he's going to get destroyed. So, like, for example, their whole mission, and Dallas has the same type of thing, too, is that you got to, you know, make sure you're not down by 10 to 14 points in the second quarter when you have to turn the game into a passing game. And with that in mind, like, for example, you go back a couple weeks ago when the Colts went into Houston and won that game. You know, Houston did the right thing. They got off to a 7-0 lead, and then 17 points came on the board by Andrew Luck in the second quarter. They're down by 10. Watson throws 31 passes, gets sacked 5 times, and gets hit 9 times. And so, literally, he's going to get hit 50% of the time or so that he drops back with the passing game. So that's why they have to limit him to 25 passes or more. And again, he's real good with those passes. It's just they can't have him do it too often.
No, because the offensive line is so terrible as far as blocking is concerned in front of him. And that's scary because I'm going to tell you right now, You know, the Colts defense is pretty darn good.
It is. Agreed.
That is a pretty good. They're fast. They look like they remind me of the old Tony Dungy type defenses that used to run around, make plays, and be very aggressive. Now, you look at that compared to the opposite side with Andrew Luck. I think he was only sacked, what, 9 or 10 times this year?
No, it was about 18 or so, but it wasn't sacked very often, that's for sure.
But say 18 to 60 plus. I mean,
right.
They're giving him the opportunity to get rid of the ball. They're running the ball pretty well with a balance. Frank Wright has done a real good job with that team.
Yeah, that's why I think he's going to finish second for Coach of the Year behind Matt Nagy. You know, because Matt Nagy was able to win 12 games with Mitchell Trubisky at quarterback. Reich has come in there, aggressive play caller. You can see Chris Ballard's. You know, that's going to be interesting because, again, you got kind of a Chicago in the battle for Executive of the Year and also Coach of the Year. And, again, this may be slighting Pete Carroll, maybe slighting Andy Reid. But, you know, to take a Chicago Bear team that I think most people thought was going to win 5, and then you take a Colts team that Andrew Luck hadn't played pretty much in, like, 2 years, and, you know, take them from 1-5 into the playoffs. I mean, that's incredible coaching.
That's incredible because, you know, I'll be honest with you. I didn't think the Colts would be that good this year.
Mm-hmm.
After the
Agreed.
Debacle with Josh McDaniel, with the hiring search and all that, then going to Frank Wright and having some other issues. And, I mean, they've got this ungodly number of cap space for next year. It's unbelievable. But, so when you look at all that and you look at this game, Mr. Clayton, I think the road team is going to win this game.
Well, when you think about it, in 3 of the 4 instances, you can make the argument that the road team is better. I mean, for example, I know that a couple weeks ago the Chargers lost a home game to Baltimore, but, I mean, they're a 12-win team, and they have more talent than Baltimore. I mean, they have better offense. I mean, because they got Phillip Rivers at quarterback, and they've got, Melvin Gordon at running back. There's a lot of talent on that team. Then you see a couple weeks ago, Houston went into, Houston hosted Indy and lost that game. Seattle has already beaten Dallas 4 out of the last 5 times they faced them. And so it's not going to be easy, but I would not be surprised if you see, 2 or 3 of the wild card road teams winning.
Yes, because, you know, and the thing, you bring up Baltimore. The thing about Baltimore is, you know, especially with Jackson at the quarterback, the Chargers had the ability, even though they lost that game, they have the ability. Now they got him on tape going against their guys. So they can make those adjustments. It's hard, you know, they can make those adjustments to adjust to what he is doing and how to shut him down. Now, also,
Agreed.
I think Melvin Gordon didn't play in that first game, right?
He did not, no.
So he's going to be back. He should be able to give some stability, at least to give him the ability to run the ball. Now, most teams, the teams that beat the Colts, not the Colts, the Ravens this year, most of them had the ability to run the ball over 100 yards. And that would balance off what the Ravens are doing on defense, because I could see that being a much better game against the Ravens with the Chargers this time around.
When you think about it in the big picture, you can include this for all of the 4 division winners that are playing the wild cards. There's a limitation to what they can do offensively because, you know, 1, they have young quarterbacks. 2, in some cases, like Houston, they have a bad offensive line. 3, there's a limitation to the passing game. It's like you don't want any of these 4 quarterbacks. Now, again, Watson has the ability to do it, but, again, the offensive line doesn't give the ability to stand upright. And so because of that, you know, it's like all 4 division winners are in the position that, they have to win a game a certain way.
Definitely. You talk about offensive line. You look at Dallas's offensive line. You said earlier that the guard is not going to play. And also, you know, Fredrickson, the center, is out. You know, that creates a problem. And you also got Teron Smith. He's coming out there with a neck stinger to play that game.
Right.
You know, now, can he hold up? And you know, there are some areas on that offensive line that the Cowboys, they're not the offensive line that everybody thought they were maybe, 2 years ago? It's not the same.
No, I mean, last 2 years, I mean, they've been, last two or three years, they've been about the best in football. They are really good. But this year, I mean, Tyron Smith with that back and the neck, he's not been the same. Same thing. Zach Martin's still pretty good. I mean, he's fought through that knee injury, but he still has missed two out of three games down the stretch. So that's been, a big question mark. So, and then, I mean, the left guard position has been wide open. I mean, Sulafield is just kind of a street free agent that came in and just kind of filled the gap, and now he's going to miss the game. So they do, and, you know, they've had to use Joe Looney at center over Travis Frederick, who's a Pro Bowler.
Now you, when you look at that with that guard position like that, that Jerry Reed hasn't played that bad for the Hawks. I mean, he's, what, 10, 11 sacks this year or something
like
that?
10 and a half, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, 10 and a half.
I mean, you know, hey, when you got a guard that's out and you bring in a little fresh movie up in there, there could be some issues coming out because, you know, gun pressure coming right directly in the face of a quarterback is not what he likes, you know?
No, agreed. Yeah, and that's because, again, you can get – I mean, remember, he's been sacked 56 times.
There you go.
Think about that, 56 times. Now, again, Russell Wilson's been sacked 51.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, that's where which defense is going to crack, you know?
Yeah.
I look at it, Doug Baldwin said that he's a little healthier now. That'll allow Tyler Lockett and Doug Baldwin to at least give some, at least relieve some pressure coming off of Russell Wilson like that. You know, you got to look at the experience of the quarterback. What, Russell Wilson is 8-4 in playoff games. Zach, my man over there in Dallas, he's only had one playoff game and he's 0-1.
Right. You know, in fact, that's the interesting part. It's like, and each of these matchups are like this. I mean, again, because, you know, like, for example, there are six quarterbacks that are young. One of the youngest group, 25 years or younger, and none of them have won a playoff game. I mean, Watson, this is his first. Dak is 0-1. Trubisky's first. Lamar Jackson, first. Jared Goff lost last year. Patrick Mahomes, his first. And like in the case, Watson goes against Luck, who's been to a championship game. Wilson, who's been to two Super Bowls. Foles, who has been, who won a Super Bowl game, won all three playoff games last year. And Rivers, who has been to a championship game.
Definitely, you were talking about Chicago and Philadelphia. I tell you right now, if I was Chicago, I think I would have taken that game and let Minnesota come over there so I could take care of them. But No, I'm just saying. But you know, because I'm gonna tell you right now, Philadelphia, they got a championship pedigree over there, Mr. Clayton, and they're not gonna come in there and just lay it out. And if you look at you got those boys on that defensive line with the Philadelphia Eagles, they can hunt. And Mitchell Trubisky has been prone sometime to have 3 and 4 interception games. So is this two wide receivers are going to be ready for the game tomorrow?
Allen Robinson's going to be ready for Chicago. I mean, Ryan Grant's out. Wallace should be able to go, and they should be okay for Philly.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember the Chicago, both of the receivers, I think they got nicked up in the game against Minnesota.
Yeah, but Robinson's been hurt a good portion of the season, but he's been able to battle through it.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting. There's really no dominant road team in this week, not home team coming into these wild card games this week. There's really no dominant home team. There's nobody that you can just say, this is concrete, they're going to win hands down.
Because you can look at the odds makers. I mean, for example, if you believe that the odds makers usually give a 3-point advantage to the home team, well, Seattle and Indianapolis are 1 or 2 point underdogs, and so there's basically you're kind of saying that slightly they think those two teams are better. I know that Baltimore. I can't believe that Baltimore is a 3-point favorite over the Chargers because I still think the Chargers are the better team. And then you got 6.5 points Philadelphia behind as an underdog to Chicago.
Yeah, I know, and Philadelphia. I tell you, Mr. Clayton, Philadelphia is one team. And besides the Colts in the playoffs, that they can give you a lot of trouble with their experience. With the Philadelphia Eagles. And Nick Foles, for some reason, he happens to sort of make that, he energizes that team, Mr. Clayton. I mean, I know a lot of people now want to say that. And Carson Wentz, he's coming back from a major knee surgery, so I wouldn't expect him to be 100% this year. Next year, you'll see better from him, you know, as far as that's concerned. But Nick Foles, he's got that team playing good, and they love playing for Nick Foles.
So they really do. I mean, he's kind of no nonsense. He just goes in there, executes the game plan. They don't get too tricky with him, and it just seems to work. And he does step up into big games. Hey, JB, it's going to be a fun weekend. Enjoy.
Enjoy, my friend. Are you going to be on Westwood One, Mr. Clayton, right quick?
No, I'm going to be on the Seahawks. I'm going to be on the Cowboys sideline on the Seahawk broadcast.
All right, Mr. Clayton. Enjoy that and safe travels, my friend. Talk to you next week.
All right, hey, thank you. All righty, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
We are taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, John, how are you?
Doing well.
Good.
Getting ready for
good.
A good weekend of football.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we got the holidays over with, but it's still the era of good feelings, if you will, with all this great playoff action. And I'm glad the Seahawks are part of it, John.
Yep, that's going to make it fun. And, you know, again, what a great season for Pete Carroll, one that I think I thought this was going to be a 9-win team that can get to 10, and sure enough, they were able to get to the 10 and do the great job and all that, and, you know, set things up now where, with Pete Carroll getting the contract extension, they can start thinking about, you know, extending this thing and seeing if they can make another Super Bowl run.
Indeed. I think it's a testament to a lot of things, John. I mean, have fortitude, believe in yourself, and stay the course. And they've done that. And they had an identity with running the football. I know that's been waning lately. They got it back, and they're going full stride now, John. It's really great to witness. A few programming notes, by the way, John. I really liked the roundtable you had earlier this week with Brock. And was it Danny that you were with as well for that hour?
No, it was Dave Wyman.
Dave Wyman, that's right. That was fantastic, John. I really enjoyed listening to you guys have a very engaging conversation, different than what we normally experience when we hear the personalities on 710 ESPN. It was fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It was fun.
Absolutely.
I get it's now going to be up to the Seahawks to see if that's going to happen again.
Well, let's hope they win this weekend. Also, it was great to hear Dave Grosby back with you at before the 12 o'clock hour. I always enjoy that part of your show. And I also enjoy it, you know, let's say at the 10 o'clock hour on Saturday.
He'll be back today.
Oh, that's just fantastic. And it's good to see that he's back doing what he does best, which is being on the air with you guys.
Yeah. Now, the big thing is, as a friend of his for 30 years, it's just great to have him back being healthy again.
Indeed. John, the Raiders made a lot of moves earlier this week. Mike Mayock has been signed on as the GM. What are your thoughts on that, John?
I don't know. It's like, I guess it's okay. Obviously, he's studied so much. I mean, you know everything that he has studied because he's on the air so much with the draft and all the previews and all that stuff. The question's going to be, how much is he going to be listened to by John Gruden? Now, one thing with Mike, I mean, he'll be argumentative enough, and if he doesn't agree with what John wants to do, he'll express his opinion. But the question is going to be, will John Gruden listen?
Right. Well, here's the thing, John. I mean,
By the way, you also saw that they're in the process of hiring Ryan Grigson, the former Colts general manager.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent move as well. I mean, wasn't he with the Seahawks earlier this year?
Yes. He was a consultant with the Seahawks, correct.
Right. And he's got some good background with the Colts and such. But getting back to Mayock, you know, he's a pretty straight-laced guy. Everybody knows him from the NFL Network. He's really a diligent worker. He's usually spot on about his evaluation when it comes to prospects in the NFL. And the reason why I think it'll work, John, is twofold. First of all, you know, Gruden has been doing football for a long time, and so has Mayock. And, you know, he will respect Mayock. They may not agree. And if the last word needs to be said as far as the decision, I think it'll be Gruden. But at least there'll be that counterbalance. And we need that. Any organization, any decision-making process needs that to make a healthy decision. I mean, you had Richards and Jagger, and you had McCartney and Lennon, for lack of a better example. I mean, you know, you need that tension sometimes. A little bit of conflict, a little bit of disagreement. It can provide a lot of benefits to an organization or how you do things or your creative process. And you know, the draft is not a science; it's an art. and I think that'll make it work. And then the other thing is, you know, I heard Charles Davis talk earlier this week on a different network, and he was talking about how he and Gruden were at the University of Pacific, both as interns, and they were brought on over there as they were. Excuse me, they were both interns, I think, at the University of Pittsburgh, and then they were brought in as assistant coaches at the University of Pacific. And how they got up every morning, they kept at it, they kept a regular routine, and Davis got to know not only Gruden as a coach, but also he got to know Mayock as an analyst on the NFL Network, and he thinks it's going to be a nice marriage. So I think that's a good thing, and I think that the Raiders needed to do something like that, because everyone's kind of scratching their heads like you and I are.
Yeah, because again, but I still think that, you know, I was just going through this as far as, how bad they are right now for talent, because they've got so many problems with the roster. You know, they've got about, eight to nine guys on the Pro Bowl that have been to the Pro Bowl, not that they've done it this year, but I mean, they're getting so old. I mean, you know, like Dwayne Harris has made it as a kick return guy, and you've got Donald Penn, who's 35. You know, Osamili, I don't know if he's going to be with the team next year, because he's now 30 and he's been banged up the last 2 years. I mean, you know, by the time they sort through all of this, they may only be down to like about two or three guys who have been to the Pro Bowl, and that means you're at a total rebuilding stage.
Well, I agree with that, John. It's going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds, and I think your forecasting when it comes to rebuilds, the whole 4 year program.
All you have to do. And again, usually it takes longer because you're not going to have successes, and you're going to have bad years where you don't have the quarterback 1 year, or you don't have the main positions that you need. Now, the advantage they have this year, and that's why they really should not trade Derek Carr. It's a bad year to be looking for a quarterback. And I think you can see that most of the teams that are in the flex position to decide about their quarterbacks are taking a position, let's stay with the quarterback. I mean, it happened in Tampa Bay. I still think it'll happen with the Giants because, you know, It's a good defensive year, and you know that pass rush was one of the worst we've seen in the National Football League in the last decade. It was so bad, and so it's a good year to be looking for a defensive end who can rush the passer.
Yes, indeed. John, what the heck's going on with Antonio Brown?
That's a mess. I mean, now apparently some more details came out, and I guess in meetings that week, Ben Roethlisberger criticized Antonio for not really paying attention too well, and I guess it was one play where on the field he ran the wrong route, and Ben says, get him off the field. Just get him off the field. And Antonio just fumed about that, I guess, through, and I know he was not happy about not being the team MVP, and so he missed a couple of days. You know, now they have to decide if they can trade him or not.
Well, I think it's going to be difficult for them to trade it, and I think it's had implications for the team management. I mean, they let go of Joey Porter, right? The linebacker coach.
Joey Porter, yeah. They might fire Keith Butler, the defensive coordinator.
Right. And you know, and Tomlin's got his hands full, John.
Yeah, no. Hey, got to run.
Okay, John. Bye-bye.
All right, Raider Jim, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ed. Hey, Ed, how are you?
Good morning, John. Happy New Year.
Good to hear your voice again. Haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, well, we sleeping in on Saturday mornings, but critically,
I envy you. That'd be nice.
Crucially, it's good to hear from you, because of all the people here locally on ESPN, you've got the best information. Let's leave it there. I'm a little behind the eight ball when it comes to injuries this week for the Seahawks. You know, Sweezy had been banged up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Fluker and Bradley McDougal and so forth. So can you run down what you feel are, you know, where some of these guys are and how well they should be playing this weekend?
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. I mean, Trey Madden's going to be out. He's the one guy that was listed as doubtful, and he hasn't practiced all week. J.R. Sweezy, you know, I've talked to him on Thursday, and he probably, you know, is a one where he's pushing it for a week, but he's willing to push it, so I think he's going to be able to go. DJ Fluker's going to try to play with that hamstring injury. Interviewed him on the show yesterday. You know, know, it's not going to be easy, but he'll fight through it. Remember, he fought through it in the Kansas City game a couple weeks ago. Looks like Shaquille Griffin should be okay on that ankle. Had a full practice the other day. They didn't put him as even questionable on the injury list. In fact, as far as just determinations, Madden is considered to be doubtful, and so he's not going to play. And, you know, you've got questionable right now with Sweezy, but again, I think he's going to play. So really, they're in pretty good shape going into this one. And, of course, you know, compared to – go back to the Dallas game last – I mean, there's three guys that didn't play in the first Dallas game in week three that are going to be back because Doug Baldwin didn't play because of his knee injury. They didn't have K.J. Wright. And then Justin Britt was not able to play, and they had to go with Joey Hunt. And that was a game where they totally revamped the middle of the offensive line because that was D.J. Fluker's first game. That was J.R. Sweezy's first game ever at right guard. And then Joey Hunt was at center, and, you know, they got over 32 carries for Chris Carson, and he gained over 100 yards, and that started that running offense going.
Yeah, and that sounds really good because Britt and those guys that you just mentioned are really critical to the Seahawks doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully
I agree.
Won't miss any kicks.
I know. Talking to him this week, I mean, you know, he's a little disappointed that he missed five field goals and a couple extra points. I mean, that kind of nagged at him. And the fact that he only had 20 field goals. But that's, you know, in some ways, that's one of the good things about this team. You know, the fact that he only had 25 field goal attempts. And the reason he had only 25 was because Russell Wilson was doing so well in the red zone. And, you know, this offense, if you really think about it, I know that Brian Schottenheimer said it this week, that they ended up with more explosive plays in the second half of the season than just about any, and those are 12-yard runs, 16-yard passes, and they scored almost 30 points a game down the stretch. They're one of the highest scoring teams in the league, so they were getting touchdowns, not field goals. Hey, Ed, thank you. It's great to hear your voice again.
John, if I can.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Dixon is one heck of a punter. But in this last game, he got pushed into and so forth. I'm guessing that during the week they worked on that.
No doubt, yeah, because it was just missed blocks, and you know he can't, he can't block him, and he can't kick block him and kick him. I mean, he just has to kick him. So I'm sure they'll fix that up.
And have a good New Year, and go Hawks.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, we'll talk to Todd Archer, get a preview of the Cowboys. He's from ESPN.com. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is Todd Archer from ESPN.com, covers the Cowboys. And so, Toddy, it's one where, you know, it seemed like an eternity ago that these two teams met. And both teams have made major changes since that game, you know, in the sense that Seattle turned their season around with the victory and the running game getting started. And since then, I think it looks like the Cowboys have gotten so much better on defense. And then they got Amari Cooper to help out the offense.
Yeah, really. I don't know what you would get if you're the coach in this game from that game in week three, because there have been so many changes. You know, the Cowboys are different specifically to them in their passing game with Amari Cooper from what the Seahawks saw in week three. Obviously, the Seahawks won't have Earl Thomas, who had two picks in that game. But there's a confidence that the Cowboys have in the passing game now that they didn't have then. Cooper's a big part of that, but so is the play of Dak Prescott. He's played really well down the stretch, as this team has only lost, what, two of their last nine games since that trade. And this has been a team that feels good about itself from what they did last week against the Giants.
What precisely does Amari Cooper do to make this offense better?
He can get open on his own. And that might sound really good, no kidding. But his route running gets him open. The Cowboys didn't have anybody on the outside that could win just by running routes, just by being crisp, just by not having to worry about his physical presence. Even when Dez Bryant was at his best, Dez was a guy who would go up, over, around, through whatever on defense. It wasn't a great route runner. This guy has given Dak a precise guide. Dak knows where he'll be, when he'll be there, and they've connected quite well, although they've missed a couple of connections here lately. But they've connected quite well, and obviously if you have a guy like that on the outside, you have to at least think about giving help outside, and that helps Ezekiel Elliott. Now, there's still eight-man fronts that the Cowboys have seen from the majority of time, but there's not been every single play where Zeke has had to run into a brick wall to make something happen.
Yeah, what is it about the offense that the leading receiver is Ezekiel Elliott with 77 catches? I know the, he gets his 20 carries a game, and he gets his 1,400 yards, so he's, you know, he's pretty much going to get 80 to 100 yards rushing a game. But what is it in the offense that got him more involved in the passing game?
The retirement of Jason Witten is probably at the top of the list, because he's catching a lot of balls that Witten would have caught as a security blanket for Prescott in terms of just, hey, no one's there, check it down, get it out of your hands, see if he can make some people miss. And, you know, they've done some things with him on the outside, whether it's route running, had a big catch against Detroit earlier in the year where he ran like a slot outside fade and for a big gain. But really, he's been a check down, a screen guy, and has provided Prescott with that same kind of outlet that Witten did for the quarterback's first 2 years. And it's the first time a running back has led the Cowboys interception since 2003 with Richie Anderson, and that was, he was another kind of outlet safety throw for Quincy Carter back in the day, and that's what Zeke kind of done for Dak here this year.
What to make out of Blake Jarwin's great game to finish the season and tight end? I mean, getting over 100 yards catching. I mean, what is this guy a chance to come on late and be for real?
Yeah, you know, he's played well down the stretch through the course of the season, and this is the guy like the Cowboys thought they were getting when they saw him in the spring in the OTAs, and they saw him early on in training camp, that they thought, okay, now he's not going to be Jason Witten, obviously, but he could be a guy who will get you 45, 50 catches, move the chains. He's okay as a blocker, but he's really a guy who moves well for a big guy, and he can get down the seams, and you're seeing the quarterback have more confidence in him. But I think what you've seen more is Jarwin having more confidence in himself. Undrafted free agent, was a walk-on at Oklahoma State back in the day, and it's kind of just kind of progressed. And this year, you know, the Cowboys lose Jeff Swaim to a wrist injury. He has to play more. They have Dalton Schultz, their rookie draft pick, who's kind of been the starter. But Jarwin brings something in the passing game that none of those other tight ends can bring. And we'll see if he can still attack the seams here today against the Seahawks and this defense and what they like to do. But it's definitely been an encouraging sign for the Cowboys and for Prescott to add Jarwin to the mix with a Cole Beasley, with a Zeke Elliott, with Amari Cooper, with Michael Gallup. They're more varied in their passing attack than they've been at any point this season.
What's been the issue with the offensive line? I know that Tyron Smith has kind of battled with his back or shoulder injury or stinger. I know that Zach Martin has had the knee injury. And the offensive line, as dominant as it's been for the last couple of years, has struggled, it seems, at times this year.
Well, one guy you didn't mention that was hurt was their other Pro Bowler, Travis Frederick. He hasn't played all season with Guillain-Barré syndrome. Joe Looney's come in and filled in and played extremely well. But he's not a Pro Bowl. He's not an all-pro type player like Travis Frederick, who can make the call, see the fronts, make the adjustments, help guys out. They've really missed him. And again, Looney has played well, and this team is in the playoffs in part because of what he's been able to do. But you mentioned injuries to Tyron Smith, injuries to Zach Martin, Connor Williams, their second-round picks, to open the year at left guard, replaced by Xavier Suofilo after he had knee surgery. He should be back in there today with Suofilo bothered by an ankle injury. So that's going to be an interesting matchup on the interior to see, because Williams is a guy who can get overpowered. But early on in the season, Clady, the issue was it just wasn't a good fit with their new offensive line coach, Paul Alexander. And they made the change the same time they made the trade for Amari Cooper. They made a change from Alexander to Mark Colombo. And they've been closer to what the Cowboys have been in the running game, just in terms of their identity, the types of runs that they want to have, the outside zones, the inside zones, things like that. And they've been, maybe it's just the eye test that tells you they've been better, if not the statistics. But this is a group that knows, that still believes that they are the identity of this team. And you know, they still helped lead the way for the league's leading rusher in Elliott. Prescott got sacked too many times. They know that. But they played better in the second half of the season than they did in the first.
What have been the issues with Dak Prescott and the 56 sacks? Because that's I know Russell Wilson's had 51, but that's a lot of sacks for a team that runs the ball as well as it does and has a 67% passing completion quarterback.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, his first years, he was still sacked a good amount, but obviously not this high. some of it is the line play, those injuries that we've just talked about, the inconsistencies up front. But a lot of it, I don't know how you quantify a lot of it, but a third of it, say, is Prescott holding onto the ball too long. And they're not escaping trouble, finding different avenues to go, or just simply throwing the ball away. He's trying to make some big plays. And what's weird is that wasn't his MO his first 2 years. It was, there's nothing there, okay, I'm getting out of trouble, okay, I'm throwing the ball away. He's not been that same guy this year, and it's been really odd where the pocket will be collapsing in front of him, and he'll simply just try and back up and withstand it and try and find something, and then he's fumbled. And he's had 12 fumbles this year. I think he's lost six. That's been the one area of his game that has been curious, because that wasn't something he did in his first 2 years.
Interesting. Now, even though the great finish, the fact that the Cooper trade worked out so well, Jarwin did so well down the stretch, I mean, is it still possible that Jason Garrett's in job trouble?
John, you've been around this long enough. Anybody who wants to predict what Jerry's going to do is just going to be making the wrong prediction, right? So I can't tell you if he loses today, he's out. But maybe it depends on how they lose and what would happen. My instinct tells me that he'll be back for the last year of his contract. There might be some other changes on the staff. But, you know, with Jerry, you can never say never to anything. And as much as he's admired what Jason's been able to do over his 8 years, and especially over these 8 or 9 games when they were 3-5 at the midway point, he's still a guy who wants to see this team that he believes has the ability to compete for a championship. Actually compete for a championship. And you know, I don't know who you go out there right now and say, this guy would definitely be better than Jason Garrett and take the Cowboys over the hump. That doesn't mean they wouldn't make that kind of move, but I don't know who you'd automatically say that, man, they got to get this guy, because everybody knows this guy's going to be a great coach.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, with the 8 teams looking right now, I mean, you know that probably 6 of them are going to probably fail in what they do in the coaching. We go back to 2006 where there's 7 hires and 6 have been fired and only Doug Peterson is the one who remains. And that's just a couple years ago. So it's like this pool of candidates for jobs is about as thin, I think, as it's ever been.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. What do we always talk about in this league? It's like, man, everybody has a hard time evaluating the quarterback position, and no one can really seem to get that right. And if you're not picking at the top, you're going to struggle. And even if you do, you're still going to – it's not a huge success rate there either. Well, there might be some troubles here for these teams identifying coaches. If you're firing coach after one season, then why do you still have a job? You know, as a GM in Arizona, or that power structure in Arizona – that doesn't make sense to me. You know, they're identifying head coaches. It just seems that there's so much groupthink that goes on in this league to where they think, well, we got to get the hot coordinator and let's go get somebody from Andy Reid Street. Now that's worked out pretty good for the last, you know, with Nagy and with Doug Peterson, that's worked out pretty well. And I think Eric Bieniemy would be another great coach in this league coming from the Andy Reid system. But there has to be some thought processes. And Rod Marinelli talked to us this week about Chris Richard, the Seahawks' old coordinator. The number one trait for a head coach has to be a leader. You have to be a leader of men. And he said that's Chris Richard's biggest strength, the ability to get people to believe in themselves when maybe they don't believe in them. And you know, Richard is a candidate. He'll be busy here tomorrow, win or lose, with Tampa, Miami, and the Jets coming after him to talk about head coaching vacancies. But there has to be a way across this league to figure out a better way to judge who can coach and who can't. And if you're firing somebody after 1 year, like I said, point the thumb to yourself as to why that messed up. It can't be the coach's fault.
No, I agree. I mean, it's just way too much. And, you know, you see the GMs, and how many GMs are now on their second, sometimes third coach? Jason Light down in Tampa Bay, you know, he's now on his third coach. And, you know, you say, okay, what's going on here? It's not working out. Hey, going back to the Cowboys defense, I mean, this defense, I mean, really, after last year in that Christmas Eve game, I mean, you can see it was almost too young. Now you can see this defense is young and it's good.
Absolutely. This is what's funny is since Rod Marinelli took over in 2014, it's been a try hard, go all out, attack the ball, you know, that kind of mentality. But they've not had the talent around it. And in these last couple of years, they've added this talent base. And this year with Van Der Esch, a couple of years, Jalen Smith now coming into his own. Byron Jones finding his way as cornerback after playing the last couple of years at safety. DeMarcus Lawrence, one of the best pass rushers in the league. And they found at all three levels increased ability with a relentlessness that Rod Marinelli wants. And you're seeing the fruits of it. This is as good a defense as Rod said he's had. And you go back to the years, I won't go back to when Tampa, when he was just a D-line coach, but you go back to the time he had in Chicago when he was running some of those defenses with Urlacher and Briggs and Peanut Tillman and these guys. He put it up there with all those. And this is a young defense that should continue to grow together. And I think the addition of Chris Richard has really brought different thought processes to this defense in terms of their blitz looks and pressure looks that has paid off in a great way, that it's just not the typical Rod Marinelli defense. There's a lot of mixture that they've added this year.
Have you been able to figure out where Jalen Smith and Van Der Esch are as far as Pro Bowl alternates?
I haven't. That's the one thing Jerry Jones, believe it or not, keeps close to the vest. I don't know if he doesn't want guys to know it because contract talks down the road or whatever it is, but you'd have to imagine that they'll be in that mix. But I think what they did, because they were both considered middle linebackers, inside linebackers, they might have canceled each other out with some of the votes, and that might have hurt themselves. Although, and Van Der Esch yesterday named second team All-Pro. Not bad for a rookie 19th overall pick that people here are booing at their own stadium back in last April to have a season like he's had.
Why were they both labeled inside linebackers? It's a 4-3 defense. You only have one inside linebacker.
I think Leighton originally wasn't even on the Pro Bowl ballot at the start of the season because they had Sean Lee there. But, it's when he was playing early on in the season, he was rotating. All three of those guys were rotating. So there was it's the Pro Bowl. We're going to watch, but no one's really going to care about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun tonight. I'm looking forward to seeing you in a couple hours over at the stadium.
Can't wait. Have a good day.
Okay, hey, Todd Archer from ESPN.com. Read him. It's good stuff. It got covered the Cowboys for so many years. A lot of great stuff. Hey, we're taking your phone calls. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Taking phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Chris in Everett. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John. Hey, Happy New Year's to you and your wife.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Hey, I got a question about the Hawks here. Now, who's favor in today's game?
The Cowboys by either 1 or 2 points.
Wow. I can't believe that.
Which shows you that, there's a little bit of, the bettors have a little bit of confidence in Seattle because you would figure that there's usually going to be a 3-point difference. And so what they're basically saying, if this game was played on a neutral field, Seattle would probably be favored by 1 or 2 points. And if they were favored at home, they'd probably be up by maybe 4 points.
Oh, I see. So do you think Seattle could beat Dallas?
Yes.
Yeah,
I think they can because, again, they've won 4 out of the last 5 games against them. Dak Prescott still has not won a playoff game. He's only been in one playoff game, lost that one. Seattle's had success in the playoffs, and, it's not going to be easy. And I think that, this is a better Cowboy team that faced the Seahawks back when they lost to the Seahawks in Week 3 because their defense has come together. They've got Amari Cooper on offense. So they're better in that regard, but so are the Seahawks. I mean, that was the turnaround game for this team. They were 0-2. Right. They hadn't run the football. Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer had a meeting of the minds to say, okay, we've got to run the ball. And even though they had completely revamped the middle of their offensive line for that game, they were able to get over 100 yards for Chris Carson on 32 carries, and then that started the aggressive offensive line play that led to them being, really getting to the playoffs.
Yeah, and another question about the Patriots. I'm not really a Patriots fan. I know, I have a friend, Keith, whatever. He's a pretty cool guy, so he's a Patriots fan. So now the Patriots, now they're in the second seed, right? So now do you think they have a chance for the Super Bowl, or what's
I think they have a chance for the Super Bowl if the Kansas City Chiefs lose next week. The idea being is that it's going to be tougher for them to win on the road. They were 3-5 on the road this year. They were 8-0 at home. And if you give them playoff games at home, they're not going to lose. I mean, they're just that good. So they're dependent on whoever can go play Kansas City and see if they can beat Kansas City. Now, again, you know Kansas City's defense is such that they are beatable. There's no question. But I think you're also seeing, a Patriot team that's starting to show the wear and tear of age. I mean, Tom Brady was not as good as he normally was. His throws were not as good. Rob Gronkowski is a shell of himself right now. You can see Julian Edelman getting a little bit of an age. And so this team is starting to show a little bit. And they only have like one or two playmakers on defense, Dante Hightower and Trey Flowers, and that's about it. And so they are beatable, but when they're at home, they can still get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So what do you think about that Patriots versus the Eagles in the Super Bowl? The team I was rooting for, I mean, it was the Eagles. I'm like, man,
the decision by Bill Belichick not to play Malcolm Butler, I think, cost them, because they did not have enough coverage cornerbacks to cover what was there at receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles. They were always one step or one player slow in being able to react. And why they elected to have a healthy scratch in Malcolm Butler, I think, cost them. I mean, it had to cost them at least one or two touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyways, how about the, I talked to this guy yesterday, and I said, about the Seahawks. How the Seattle Seahawks will get to Seattle, right, for the NFC Championship.
Don't count on that. I mean, because that would require all the top seeds to lose next week. So in other words, New Orleans would have to lose at home, the Rams would have to lose at home, and those things just basically don't happen. I mean, if you're thinking that's going to happen, I don't believe it.
Right. Yeah. I do agree what you're saying there, John. So.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Now again, I say that knowing this is as good a group of wild card teams that we've seen. I mean, they're all 10 with the exception, maybe one exception, Philadelphia, 9 wins. But, I mean, a 9-win team that won the Super Bowl last year, you have to kind of say, okay. And then you look at the Chargers. I mean, they're either a number one or number two seed. And then you can see Seattle's strong, Indianapolis is strong. So, but again, to think that everybody can win two road games and get the Seahawks to get a home game, I think that's really remote. Hey, Chris, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Chris in Seattle. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John. Good morning. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Hey, glad to hear you on the radio this morning. I know you're working the sidelines today of the Seahawks Cowboys game.
Yeah.
So kudos to you. You definitely travel well. You're like the New Orleans Saints of talk radio, sports talk radio.
I appreciate that.
No problem. Hey, I wanted to weigh in on the Seahawks and the Cowboys game. And why I think the Seahawks are ultimately going to take this. I think it could be a close game, or it could be, the Seahawks kind of win going away maybe by 11 points. And I think it boils down to red zone efficiency with TDs. Wouldn't you agree that you got to score touchdowns, right? Especially in the red zone to win the playoffs. Okay. Just looking at the statistics, the Cowboys, they rank 29th in red zone percentage for TDs, which is obviously down near the bottom of the league, and the Seahawks are like 8th. And basically in the last 3 weeks, the only two playoff teams that are better in the red zone with TDs are the Bears and the Chargers. So I think that Seattle is going to be able to score more red zone TDs, hold the Cowboys to some field goals, and ultimately pull out the win. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it from a couple sides. I mean, first off, you're correct in the standpoint that the Cowboys are only getting 48% touchdowns in the red zone, where Seattle is sitting there. At one point, they were number one, but they're at 65.45. And then on the other side, both teams are pretty good defensively stopping red zone teams. I mean, stopping in the red zone. Seattle, is sitting there with 49.2. Dallas is 51.02. But, if they have to settle for field goals, then Seattle can settle for touchdowns. And that's where a big advantage.
Yeah.
And that's been a problem all year for the Cowboys.
Yeah, definitely. And they were great last game, but, I mean, who are they playing? The Giants, right? They kind of
the Giants, right. They were terrible.
Yeah. So. Well, hey, I got to run, John. I really appreciate you being on.
Okay, hey, Chris, thank you.
And being on the radio today, and have a great day. Enjoy the game today.
All right, sounds good.
For the next week.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.